Welcome to the Corporate Innovation Podcast, presented by Singularity University and in collaboration with Singularity U Nordic. My name is Chris Ostergaard. The purpose of this podcast is to go beyond the disrupt or die headlines, get concrete about all the abstract terminology behind innovation, and into the nitty-gritty of how to truly create transformation, growth, and impact by speaking to world-leading doers and thinkers who have a lot of innovation dirt under their nails. I hope the podcast provides value for you, and hereby give you the next guest on the Corporate Innovation Podcast. So we're here on the podcast with Brendan Ives. Brendan is the head of Division X, the growth and innovation arm of Telia Company, one of the largest telcos in the Nordic area of the world. Here he is spearheading efforts in areas such as IoT, data insights, e-health, and as mentioned on LinkedIn, a whole raft of things we haven't even thought of yet. And I hope we'll get to talk a little bit about those as well. Formerly, he's been responsible for Telia's strategic investment portfolio. He's also an active on a number of boards spanning both tech, telecoms, and the finance sector, including Soundtrack Your Brand, a high-profile music tech startup from Sweden, often referred to as Spotify for B2B. Prior to Division X, Brendan was CEO of Telia Carrier, where he had various roles over 14 years, and in that time transformed the Nordic carrier into the world's leading internet backbone provider, reaching number one during his tenure as CEO, which it still holds. He has a Bachelor of Commerce from the University of Canterbury in his hometown of Christchurch, New Zealand, and has also spent time on both Kellogg School of Management and Singularity University. And what I will be talking to Brendan about here is setting up an X division in a large corporate with the declared purpose of creating minimum 10X results. But first off, Brendan, welcome here on the podcast.
Cheers, Chris. Great to be here.
So before we get started talking about Division X, it would be great just to hear a little bit about your journey with tech and how did you wind up running Division X at Telia Company? What was that journey?
Yeah, well, I started my career in banking, but was given an opportunity to jump over to telecoms quite early on. And at the time, it was really the opportunity to join what I saw as a much more dynamic industry that really sort of caught my interest more than anything else. And so I jumped over, but my restlessness probably got the better of me after a couple of years. And like a lot of my fellow countrymen, went traveling for a period, ended up in London. When I sort of left New Zealand, I guess I was very much thinking when I got to London, the ambition was work for a big global telco. And let's just say the timing couldn't have been worse. I got to London just as the dot-com bubble was bursting. And that really sort of put me in a position that I had to open my horizons a little bit and landed more by chance than anything else in wholesale telecoms with Telia. Must say, Chris, it was probably a part of the industry at the time. I thought it was the last place I wanted to end up, and I really didn't think it would last too long at all, if I'm honest. But I couldn't have been more wrong. I think really serendipity. It proved to be a super exciting part of the industry to be in, working with many of the world's largest operators, different application providers, you know, the gaming companies. And spent a very, very good tenure, more than 10 years there, ultimately as the CEO for a few years. And during that sort of time, I guess I was very much thinking, what would I do next? I thought, you know, I'm now the CEO of a wholesale operation. The next move is probably out. When I move out, given what I had been seeing, both, you know, enabling, partnering with different tech companies, I thought, working a bit closer to the startup scale-up side of the ecosystem would be interesting, and was really sort of starting to put my thoughts in that direction. And again, sort of maybe just got the luck of timing. I was asked to come in and talk to our executive, and they asked me at that point in time whether I would be open to taking on a job essentially building up startups' growth areas within Telia, and was a pretty easy decision. I got to do on the inside what I would have liked to have done on the outside. And 3 years later, here I am with Division X.
Very exciting. And so let's talk about Division X and what exactly it is. So if you were to paint like with a broad pencil here, describing to us what Division X is.
Yeah, I mean, I think, Chris, in the book you've just recently released, you talk about augmenting and mutating innovation. Mm-hmm. I would say that's very much the scope that we have been given, the sustaining innovation more happening, you know, in the core business itself. And really the mission that myself and the team are being given is spearhead the creation of a new gen telco. What does that mean? Well, we're not really there to create something different. It's to create something more. So exploring, building, commercializing, and ultimately scaling future business areas and what you could say adjacent areas to the core business.
And before we get to talk more about then how do you do that and how are you set up and what's the design of Division X here, maybe you can give us a sense of some of the projects that you are working on.
Yeah, the biggest bit for us is really around the Internet of Things or IoT. We're doing a little bit there in the consumer space, but predominantly around industrial IoT, doing everything from helping transport companies optimize their operations, working with building owners to deliver smarter and more sustainable operations, energy companies helping them essentially to automate their processes so they can better predict and optimize the their production. And on that note, I would say it's really, you know, what's been a great driver for our business is the heightened awareness of sustainability, particularly when it comes to the environment. And I think, you know, one of the great things I'm seeing in that area is that sustainability has gone from being something that's sort of, you know, corporate social responsibility that some corporate social responsibility types are working with to very much being a growth driver for our business and that we can be a great enabler to very much of the industry out there. So IoT is the bigger bet. We're doing quite a bit within the data insights space, predominantly or at least starting from the anonymized data that we have available in their own mobile networks. I would have, if you had talked to me a few weeks ago, said our big focus was around enabling city planners and public transport operators to take more informed decisions. But with Corona now upon us, the team is very heavily pivoted towards helping government and public sector to take data-informed decisions during a time of crisis. Mm-hmm. And talk about getting the team aligned around purpose. It's been, very, very easy to get the team fired up, and I've never been busier. Also, kind of tied to the Corona crisis again, Chris, would be in e-health, and I think certainly here in the Nordics, for a long time, we've seen the opportunity that digitalization could bring to the public sector to make the system more efficient, to drive out a lot of unnecessary cost and burden on the system, but also to deliver a step change in the experience for, you know, for the customer or the patient in this case. Again, with Corona, it's obviously quite tricky to mobilize some of these things fast enough, but I would say perhaps the Corona crisis is going to be the catalyst for change or acceleration in this area. But again, team very fired up in the current environment. And then last but not least, we have a more experimental unit, something we're calling X Labs. And that's really where we're doing very much what you would could say is like early stage exploration, fast prototyping. But maybe that's something we'd come back to later. I think, again, the key here is that we don't go too broad. I think it's one of the mistakes, you know, that we've made and one of the mistakes I see a lot of corporates making is trying to do too many things when very much, you know, the competitors we have out there are very, very focused, you know, laser-focused startups. And I think we've got to be careful as well that we're not trying to boil the ocean and do too many things at once.
Yeah, so there's a lot of stuff to dive into here, and I would and as you are also mentioning already several times, we're in perhaps the beginning or the midst of this coronavirus that has massive impacts on all things running a business and society and health, etc. Right, we are in late March as we're recording this, so I would love to finish our conversation on also how you have pivoted and how you have been able to pivot your focus in a very short amount of time. Because I guess if there are some positives to take out of the coronavirus, it seems to be that at least in certain organizations, the ingenuity and innovation power seem to almost explode. So would love to learn some lessons and hear some insights from your side on that. But before we get to that, maybe to really understand how you run Division X and how you've set up Division X, and even you have an X within the X, right? Your X Labs as well, and your thinking around that. Maybe we could just run through your origin story and how you have deliberately designed for doing what you're doing. So how did you even get started with this? What kickstarted it, and what were the early days like?
Yeah, I mean, in a way, I'd love to say that we started with a clean sheet of paper, and 3 years down the track, I must say, I'm still not sure what would be easier, starting with a clean sheet or starting with a number of things that we were already in the process of doing. But largely, if you look at the domains we're working with, these were things that were already going on in Telia, but in a very fragmented, in a fragmented way. Mm. And I think, you know, there's a lot of academics out there that put a lot of time into talking about how difficult it is to get the new stuff working in a corporate when it's combined with the core. And yeah, I mean, that really was the key thing I would say for us was, you know, not so much changing the direction of what we wanted to work on, but recognizing something wasn't working. And I also think just to take maybe a step back, probably all telcos have suffered from reducing return on capital in recent years, being commoditized, losing out to the new kids on the block in pretty much every battle you can think of: long distance calling, messaging, video conferencing, mobile payments, you name it. And I think even today that trend is continuing. Telcos universally sort of missing that next wave. And we were really asking ourselves the question, you know, why is that? Is it complacency? Is it, you know, reluctance to cannibalize our core business? Is it the, you know, need to sort of deliver dividend returns to shareholders versus startups that have a long-term sort of VC appetite? And I don't know that we necessarily had the answer other than something needed to change. And I'm really grateful, I think, for that sort of early conversations where our CEO had realized that something had to change. And he then went out and said, we're going to make acquisitions in the media and ICT space, but we're also going to create a growth and innovation unit that has the right prerequisites to succeed. And hence that ended up in the creation of Division X, I guess now it was sometime around the summer of 2016.
And so from that decision on, your initial conversations on, you know, what will it take to set up a successful Division X? How do we do it? I mean, do we establish an office in the middle of headquarters? Do we create something far away on the side? And all of those design conversations and decisions, what were those and what did you end up with?
Yeah, we certainly didn't get it all right on day one. But I think, you know, one thing that we had discussed very early on, and, you know, I still hold firm today that that's the right setup, at least for us, and that's to be independent enough, but to be well connected. I think if you start going and isolating yourself too much, especially when you're doing like augmenting innovation and you've got to be close to the core, you know, it's just not going to work. At least it hadn't been working when we'd sort of looked back at some of the failures in the past. So we sort of took that decision early on. Yeah, I guess it's been more the degree of independence that is the area that is needed to be tweaked over time. We certainly didn't get everything right. We've certainly got a few things, I think, still today that need tweaking. But the good thing, I think, we can now have a very open discussion about what the objectives are. And and be prepared to make those tweaks in order to get things maybe right is the wrong word, but, you know, constantly evolving, constantly improving.
Mm. And how did you set up in the beginning? I mean, there's you could have a lot of debate or discussions also around kicking off in a bigger style with, you know, hiring. You know, we sometimes see hundreds of people and with huge big budgets, and we sometimes see the exact opposite, like one person and then just starting slowly, almost organically to grow. And what was your journey like?
Yeah, I mean, because as I mentioned, we sort of had a number of businesses that were already going on, albeit quite fragmented. We actually consolidated a lot of disparate parts. So if I look at like IoT, for example, that was around 100 people in the wider organization across our 7 markets that were doing a lot of things, but, you know, probably replicating each other a lot. So we brought the IoT team together. We brought the e-health team together. We consolidated those businesses. We transformed them. And then we ended up establishing them as business units within Division X, I guess very much, you know, a startup within, you know, within the bigger company, if you will. We also looked at a lot of things that we just thought, you know, weren't working or couldn't get, you know, the, you know, shouldn't get maybe a focus. So we just stopped them outright. We've taken some other things along our journey, all the way from idea to commercialization, data insights, for example. And that started out as basically one person sitting in the lab looking at what we could do with our data, and has evolved into a team that's probably around 20 people or something today. And then I think also we had to be really true to ourselves and say, if we're meant to be a focused growth and innovation unit, we can't be handling a whole lot of other things that just don't have any other bit of home in the company. So we've sort of picked up businesses where we really aren't adding value, believe scale can be achieved better elsewhere, and either moved those elsewhere within the group, or in one or two cases, we've actually sold some businesses off. Speaking of selling businesses off, we've also along the way acquired businesses. So our IoT team is, you know, probably not quite doubled in size, but almost doubled in size during those 3 years due to both acquisitions and some organic growth as the business picks up and builds up.
And how are you situated sort of in the org chart and also physically in regards to the rest of Telia company?
Yeah, so I'm reporting in to a guy who sits on our group executive running something called Telia Global. And Telia Global, you could say, is really our international and innovation division. So my previous company, Telia Carrier, sits in that unit. Division X guys, we have Telia Ventures, which was actually a spin-off from Division X as we ramped up our venture ambitions. And also a team that's sort of looking after our multinational customers, and I think that's a good, a pretty good fit, close enough to the top. But I don't think you necessarily need to be reporting into the CEO, but it certainly needs to be visible enough on the executive agenda if you want things to work.
Yeah, and so the ambition here is to, you know, think and execute on a 10x level rather than a few percent level, right? And so tell us a little bit about how you go about that. I mean, from, you know, kickstarting a project and ensuring throughout the process to have that 10x perspective on things, and whether it then leads to abandoning a project or integrating it or whatever it is you do with it in the other end. What's the process like?
Yeah, it's a really good question. I think, you know, the key thing is, you know, and I've really held sort of firm on this from the beginning, if the only thing we're doing is working on an interesting idea, we probably haven't looked into it enough. And before we start building and running, we really need to sort of go back and ask ourselves, you know, is this an area where there's a clearly defined problem that is big enough to solve? And is that a problem that we think we have the capabilities, the ability, the willingness to solve, and can we do that better and significantly better than anyone else in a sustainable way? And I think that sort of helps us at least to get to a view of it being a, it's either a 10x improvement for our core customer base, or it's a potentially a revenue stream that at scale could contribute, let's say ballpark 10% of corporate revenue. If it doesn't look like it could ever get to that level, then I would argue there's other things that we should put our time and effort into. And that means we shelve a lot of things. I don't think we've ever sort of killed and forgotten about anything, but we push things away, and maybe at some point we'll change our view on the potential. Maybe at some point, coupled with something else, that potential comes back. But we need to be really careful where we put our resources. And I think it's easy to think that money can solve the problem, and we try not to think of it like that. Of course, money is ultimately going to be needed for funding, but we should start from our capabilities.
Mm. And so what does that mean for sort of that innovation funnel that, a project or an idea goes through? What are your sort of milestones, or what are your processes for bringing something from idea level into fruition?
We try and use a pretty structured process, and I think that's the surprise, I think, especially to corporate people. I think very often we get people thinking, wow, it'd be cool to go and jump into Division X because they just get to play with lots of cool, fun stuff. Mm. Probably get here and find there's a lot more structure and process than there, than where they've even come from. But I think when we certainly go through at the very beginning of trying to have a very open approach to the ideas that come in, both internally, externally, but then put those tough questions up before you even get started, which we just spent some time on before. And then we really sort of try and go into a like a metered funding approach with, with milestones that have to be met, all the way from that sort of, that ideation, building that POC, building that MVP, getting out to the first customer, getting out to the first market. Do we go into scale? I think it's difficult to sort of, put a hard number or a hard metric on any of those phases, but we certainly... for any bet that comes through, the other questions that we're asking ourselves, what does success look like? What do we need to deliver in each milestone so that when it gets to the next phase, we think, it warrants or justifies getting further funding to go on? Pretty much the way that a venture capitalist would be looking at how they fund their portfolio companies, to be honest. And I think there's a lot we can learn from the VC world. I'm grateful to have a colleague now running Telia Ventures who very much comes from that venture side. And I always say that at a venture firm, you often get an entrepreneur in residence. I try to have a VC in residence so that we use a lot of that venture kind of questioning and challenging on the stuff we're doing internally as well.
Mm. And that brings us also to the notion of people, right? And how do you decide what the right people on in a Division X that you guys are running are? And as you mentioned to begin with, one was you had projects going on inside of the company that I don't know if you migrated them like one-to-one into Division X, or how did you find the right mix of people and what were you looking for given that it's not your normal corporate job that you would be running in Division X?
Yeah, it's that's not a simple one to answer. I guess that's been a journey as well. But I think, again, especially when you're augmenting innovation or doing, working with adjacencies close to the core, it would be naive, if not foolish, to think, let's just go and hire a whole bunch of people from outside and do things differently. Mm. Likewise, just keeping the team that we had before and saying, and now we're going to be work more in a startup way, it's simply not going to happen right. So it's been a mix. I think we have certainly had to make sure, like any company does, that we have the right team on the right assignments at any time. That's meant, some changeouts of people along the way. But basically any opportunity that we have, we're always looking at you know, what's the right person for the job? If they're internal, great. If we need to go external, that's just the way it is. And I think it, with a portfolio of bets, it's really varied quite a bit. If I look at our data insights area, for example, quite an entrepreneurial unit. I was really lucky actually there. I thought I would have to go outside and found a guy inside that had been in the company a short time, but had returned from the US for family reasons and had actually been building and starting up companies over there in the past. Was super to be able to find that type of resource internally. When we were going into the digital health space, obviously very specialist area, went outside, hired a lady that had had started up a healthcare company, taken it to a listing here on the Stockholm exchange, and was ready to sort of looking to see what her next step was. So it's been a mix. I think, you know, maybe one of the key things, regardless of whether people come internal or external, is attitude and mindset. And I think having worked both, you know, within a large corporate, but also with a number of startups, I would say doing innovation in a corporate is maybe almost one of the toughest places to be. You have the internal battles to fight as much as the external battles to fight. And I think whoever's going to work here has to be able to handle that type of environment. It doesn't work to come in and say, I'm just going to ignore the core business. And likewise, it doesn't work if you think the way to go about everything is the way that we've always done things around here. So we hire as much for attitude and mindset as we do domain expertise and domain experience.
Yeah, so there's a lot of interesting stuff to discuss there also around, right? How setting up a more entrepreneurial, if you like, unit, but then actually being able to communicate with the core of the organization that I would also love to hear a little bit more about. And there's also the notion of, as you say, you know, hiring for attitude and mindset. And often when we talk about innovation, one, it's not typically not really well defined. And there's a lot of this, disruption talk that is also not really well defined. And sometimes in headlines, at least, you can sort of get the sense that, you know, we got to disrupt ourselves and, almost pull the rug out from underneath everything and find those radical innovators. And in my sort of opinion, you got to be really careful with radical innovators. I mean, you really want them, but in the right positions. Because otherwise you might just create chaos and anarchy, right? I don't know what your experience is and where do you find how to best sort of juggle or find that balance between where you want the radical, more radical people and where you want the more incremental people, for lack of better wording.
Yeah, it's a super interesting question. I think to some degree, I try and get rid of a lot of the sort of buzzword of innovation and talk much more that we're a growth unit. So the majority of my team is here to take a problem, try and solve it and build that solution into either a product or a business. That said, within our, X Labs area, there's some of the guys that are, actually tasked with being more radical thinkers at least, but it's making sure that you have that tight leash, give them enough room to move, but you've got to be super careful that you're not going in and doing things that can be very damaging, both, to your reputation internally, but also the relationship internally. I think ultimately what it comes down to is, and that's really my, one of my very key roles, I would say, running the unit, is to be always wearing the Telia company hat. So if I believe that we can do something that's going to be disruptive or challenging to the core, but incrementally, net positive for the group, then I'm going to go and fight for it. If it is people that have got really radical ideas, it's going to go and destroy the core business and not really understand the outcomes, that's when I need to be sort of stepping in and keeping a grip of it. We tend by, from that perspective, I think, Chris, to be a lot more around that kind of augmenting innovation profiles than the, you know, the really radical or the mutating. But it's good. It's good to have a couple too, right? And I certainly like to bring that divergent thinking in. Maybe not even necessarily on the team. You know, so whether it's you know, sort of just bouncing ideas with people on the outside, or you know, the type of profiles we might bring into our advisory board, get some of that radical thinking there, but don't necessarily put too much of it with the money and the ability to just run wild. Tricky balance.
Mm. Yeah, and you're pointing to also the notion of, you know, openness and partnering, et cetera. So how do you go about that? How do you collaborate outside of your own core?
This episode is presented in partnership with Singularity University. If the future you've been planning for arrived today, would your organization be prepared? If your answer is anything other than a resounding yes, you might be in danger of falling behind your competition. In the race of innovation, your success depends on your ability to adapt and start thinking and acting exponentially. Singularity University can help you develop a future-focused mindset and toolset and connect you to a global community of changemakers just like you. Come explore the future of exponential technologies, learn how other organizations are adapting to change, and build a strategy that keeps your organization at the top of your game no matter what the future brings. Take charge of your future. Visit su.org/CIP to learn more.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of it is just about also networking, right? So I really sort of try and make sure that within the team we have good, you know, good contacts, good outreach to the wider ecosystem. And then with any problem that we look at, actually really sort of looking at it and saying, how do we solve this in the right way? Is this something we can do totally ourselves? Should we bring a partner in? In some cases, maybe should we do absolutely nothing other than, you know, maybe give support and funding to a startup? And ultimately, when they sort of hit certain milestones, we might bring that into our distribution channels, for example. So I think the key for us is really just being open-minded and solve each problem that we sort of face and want to face in the best possible way. And if that means an openness to an external ecosystem, I think all the better. Funding is an important part there too, I think. You know, one of the biggest mistakes I think, you know, that we've been making in the past was if you sort of perceive that you've got unlimited funding, especially in a tech company, you're going to try and do everything yourself. So if you can sort of start really tightening the purse strings, forcing the team to be super, super efficient in how they solve a problem, more often than not, it actually forces them to find partners if they don't have unlimited budget to just hire people, for example.
Yeah, it's one of the things that I believe is John Hagel, he talks about from the Deloitte Center of the Edges, talks about starving the edges, right? Which is a sort of, I don't know, a vivid way of perhaps talking about the notion of sometimes too much money is actually not a good thing in terms of entrepreneurship and ingenuity. And so when you talk about working with startups, is that then run by your venture arm? And what do the collaborations here look like?
Yeah, so actually, I mean, the venture arm is relatively new for us. When I started out with Division X, I had a small venture team, you could say, that was predominantly doing investments in companies that we wanted to partner with. And we were therefore using that investment to really strengthen the partnership and fuel that company to do things faster for us. After a while, we actually found that that was almost, you know, there was a conflict of interest there very often. And I was therefore very pro in saying, I think it's really good if we separate it. And then we should have a close connection with that venture arm. So we help each other, you know, whether it's knowledge sharing, what's happening on the market, giving each other access to the startups that we're talking to, but no commitments. So if I partner with a startup, for example, I would introduce them to our venture team. If that results in an investment that's made on a, you know, purely financial investment basis, then great. Likewise, companies they invest in, they're going to connect me and the team and see if we can do something with them. But again, no obligations. And we've found that that's actually working pretty well. More often than not, it's actually the hard thing with a corporate is finding the right person to speak to. So if we do nothing more than just make the right introductions, we're actually helping them a lot along the way as well. So.
And I know one of the things that you also have had some interesting experiences with is the whole notion of bridging to the corporate core, and whether you, when you set out on new projects and initiatives from the get-go, sort of design for integration with the core or not. And it's something that, you know, almost any larger company is struggling with when they have innovation initiatives on the side, that, you know, how do we actually ensure that we build the right types of bridges from our innovation initiatives not run by the core, and that they then actually can travel into the core if that is what we need to be. What are your learnings and experiences here?
Yeah, it's a really good question. I think one of the mistakes that we made, I think, at the beginning was very much sort of assuming that everything was going to fly, and therefore sort of almost trying to achieve that efficiency before we'd even got started. You know, so for example, we'd be trying to leverage core systems, use all the existing processes, and quite simply, they weren't fit for purpose. The only thing it did is really slow us down, and we never really got started, or worse, we actually front-loaded a lot of cost. And the way that I've sort of tried to work with that, and I think, you know, we've come round to that realization over time, is to say, if we acquire a company, a startup or a scale-up or you know, another large company, we accept that there's going to be some things that need to be cut. There's going to be some waste. We're going to have to, scrap one system, move to another system. And I think it's to sort of realize in a lot of ways that we have to almost have that same openness to the new things we're building up. Allow that internal startup to use whatever systems, whatever processes are necessary to get it scaling. And then when it's actually at scale, take a look at it and say, would it be a smart move to start migrating over to core systems and processes instead of doing that at the front end? And I think, you know, as a result, we've been a lot faster. And more often than not, things that we've actually built to support the new businesses are attracting a migration of core services as opposed to the other way around. And it's really just to sort of recognize that and price that in from the beginning. I think kind of tied to that question, Chris, is also distribution. You know, one of the learnings that I think we've had along the way is that we were probably trying to build new businesses and then get those new businesses out through our existing channels. And when we did that exclusively, it's, you know, I would say one of the biggest areas that we struggled in. And I think for good reason, that is that our core channels are really geared up to drive mature products at scale. And if we start going and saying, hey, guys, you know, we've got these new products that we really want you to try. They're small. We don't know if they're going to scale. We're just burdening them with a whole lot of new stuff. And we really sort of saw that conflict between scalable efficiency and scalable growth. So I think we've managed to move the conversation very much over the last couple of years. So instead of sort of now assuming that that's the right way to market, we say, what's the problem we're trying to solve? How can we reach the customer in the best possible way to deliver a winning customer experience? And then last, look at, you know, what's the channel mix? It might be that our own channels are the ones we should use exclusively. Sometimes they might be just any other channel. In some cases, maybe they're never going to be the right channel to market. So really sort of try and get that part right. And I think I've heard a saying out there, they say, you know, first-time founders are focusing on the product, second-time founders on the distribution. And I think that applies, you know, in my experience, very much as much to a corporate as it does to a startup working greenfield.
Mm. Does that mean you even set up your own sales channels as well to sell products and services?
Yeah, we might. So I think on some of the stuff that we're doing in enterprise, in IoT or data analytics, healthcare, we actually have specialist sales. And then they are either working in good coordination with our, you know, the key account managers in our core business, or could be establishing relationships with the alternative channels to market. So if I take something like, you know, in the data insight space, it's a super verticalized market. You need that deep, deep vertical insight to be able to sell a solution to a customer. We're never going to try and build up that type of verticalization in a corporate like this. And therefore, we pinpoint, you know, what's the right channel to market? Who are the right partners to get this product scaling? And then we would be typically managing those relationships in Division X. And also sort of from the aspect that we're pan footprint. So if it's a pan footprint channel, then we would definitely be looking after that.
Mm. So another thing that I want to talk a little bit to you about before we all end up talking about how you guys have adapted to the coronavirus here is metrics, KPIs. And so I'm curious as to your experiences on the types of metrics and KPIs that you're using in Division X, how they might differ from what you would do inside of the core and what your learnings have been.
Yeah, when I think about that question, it's actually fun sort of thinking back to how, you know, when we started out, it really was that sort of whole discussion around the traditional financial metrics. And I think we've come a long way. I think we've very much come to the realization that, you know, the metrics need to make sense for each bet. The metrics need to be much more, you know, leading indicators of, you know, are we seeing progress? Is there a likelihood of success versus a very lagging indicator like, you know, like revenue? I think as one example, in some of the things that we're doing right now, we quite frankly don't know what the best way to monetize is. You know, is this something that we might ultimately give away for free as a retention tool with our core business? Is it something we can monetize standalone? Is it a combination of the two? So there we would, for example, we're much more focused on, you know, very much sort of, I guess, customer specific metrics. You know, what are the conversion rates like? What's the lifetime value? Can we get a gross margin that we think makes sense at scale? And a lot of focus on really sort of building up that, you know, active users. If we can get customers actively using and loving our products, then I think we're onto something. And it's probably been one of the longest journeys we've had, but I would say it's been a good debate with our financial teams internally. And I think, you know, both of us have probably evolved a lot and you know, come to a model I think that works pretty nicely for us. But again, it's constantly tweaking, and I think it's never easy. Each bet is different. The only advice that I have to my own team and, you know, to anyone listening is put time and effort at the very beginning into what are we trying to achieve here and what does good look like, so that when you actually get to each milestone that everyone is on, you know, on the same page in terms of is this a success or not, and you don't get there and it becomes a very a subjective debate about whether we should continue. And that's a learning process as well. I think the more things we do, the more things we take through the funnel, the better we get at it.
Yeah. And the notion of agility, I guess, and adapting to new changes in the world. I mean, we're in unprecedented times here, right? Some people talk about the biggest crisis in 100 years, and let's hope it doesn't get that bad. But it's certainly not anything we've seen in our, yeah, in our lifetimes, and not a pandemic like that, literally in 100 years. So tell us a little bit about, you mentioned in the beginning here, how you have pivoted your focus, at least to a certain extent, on what kind of products you're developing here. What has been going on inside of Division X since you started relating to the coronavirus?
Yeah, I mean, I think our business in general, like any business, is looking at the impact assessment, right? And I think in a way, this is what a lot of the services telcos have been building, have been designed for, remote communication, analytics that can help taking decisions. So I think in a lot of ways, it's been probably a lot easier for us than maybe a lot of industries to sort of, you know, see the role that we have to play and see where we can be relevant. But if I take an example of where we've pivoted, our data insights team has been super busy, you know, the last 6-12 months in the retail space. Retail under heavy disruption, how can they use data to be more competitive? In the current environment, I mean, those conversations have stopped. Many of those businesses are, you know, on complete stand down right now. So we really just sort of sat down as a team and said, how can we redeploy that resource fast to start building conversations, building product, building solutions to help the public sector? And that was a relatively easy shift. But I think, again, it also sort of comes back a little bit to the profile of people that we've got. The team should be able to be quite agile and pivoting if they're going to be building new companies, building new businesses. And coronavirus, I think, the crisis has really just sort of been a bit of a pressure test on our ability to make that pivot. And I'm super proud of what the team has been doing in the data insight space and healthcare space. And I think across our whole business, we're just seeing totally new demands, and it changes by the day as well, right? But I think we take a great responsibility out of this on saying, put all the thinking power we have into what we can do to help today. And I think you touched at the beginning as well, Chris, it's probably going to be quite long lasting in terms of what this is going to drive as well. So we're trying to be sort of both here in the moment, but also thinking ahead to how will the market learn from this crisis? What are the types of services, et cetera, that are going to be, you know, sought after to make us more resilient as a society in the future? And that will likely force us to change not only what we're doing in Division X, but change some of the things that we're thinking as a telco and as an industry as well.
And do you find that it's you guys who are identifying needs and then going out into the market or to your existing or potentially new clients based off of the crisis here? Do you find also the other way around, that your clients are coming to you now with entirely new demands, or how does that play out?
Yeah, I think it's a bit of both. I mean, therein lies the challenge a little bit with some of the, you know, with new things, right, is that we've been sort of almost in stealth mode on some of the things that we're doing in data or e-health. And then, bang, the crisis comes upon us. And we're thinking we've got exactly the type of products that we, that can help at a time like this. But if customers aren't aware of it, we're certainly not at a scale to be out talking to everybody. We're having to think on our feet a little bit about how do we make everybody aware of what we can do to help right now, at the same time recognizing that everybody is in crisis mode right now and not necessarily receptive to hearing about a whole lot of new things. So we're learning by the day. We're getting a lot of media attention around some of the things that we're doing to help different cities, such as City of Oslo was probably one of the ones we got involved with first. And we're just trying to get those good news stories out and hopefully create awareness of what we can do and what we can do together now. And hopefully that enables us to be quite rapid, because the sooner people start dealing with the crisis, obviously, the sooner it'll be able to be pulled under control. But we're just playing a small part, of course, but we think there's never been a more valuable cause to try and fix than what we're facing right now.
Yeah, for sure. And another part of this is speed, right? Because we always talk about, or a lot of us talk a lot about, how technology is developing at an accelerated pace and we need to understand to move faster. But now we really need to move faster, right? It's like a whole new level of fast because industries are literally seeing from one day to the other that all demand totally stops. How do you see that playing out? Do you see organizations, industries out there getting ready to move at that pace, or is it everything becoming more internalized, focused on cutting costs and trying to ride it out?
Yeah, it's a. I guess it's not black and white, but you know, I personally think, and you know, for us, we have those proof points with a couple of our businesses. Right, is that innovation is almost even more important during a crisis.
Yeah.
So I think you know this. Hopefully, there's things that can be done to help right now. But at the very least, I think it's going to awaken or enlighten people to, you know, the need for more automation, the need to be more data-driven in, you know, in our businesses and in society in general. One never really likes a crisis to be necessary, but I think there's a lot of good that will come out of it. But hopefully it, you know, it doesn't end up as severe as you say, a hundred year crisis. It's obviously a terrible time for society in general.
Indeed it is. And so I hate to sort of end our conversation on a bummer like that. So it's certainly challenging times, and I don't mean to make too little out of it. I totally agree with you that innovation is more important now than ever. It unfortunately, statistics tend to show that in times of crisis, innovation actually slows down, although we also see these incredible innovation stories coming out of every crisis. Apple, to mention one, Ford out of the big recession, or the long recession, I guess, et cetera, et cetera. So what's your, from speaking from a Division X perspective in a large corporate here, what's your, I don't know if it's one, two, or three pieces of top advice to give to people listening here on the podcast in order to amp up on their innovation powers, not from a money perspective, but from, you know, tools, mindsets, that type of stuff.
Yeah, I think storytelling, you know, is critical. So I sort of come back to what I said before about, you know, you need to have enough independence to run and get stuff done. But ensure that you stay well connected. And for me, well connected is really about storytelling. Be as open, transparent as possible. Be clear on what your you know, on what your expectations are, and celebrate your successes. But equally, be open on things that aren't working, and showing that you're being decisive and taking decisions to stop things. I think also obviously sharing successes. I think it's easy in a big corporate to sort of try and convince everybody to work with you from day one. And we tend now to be, look for those early adopters internally, find the proof point that something is working. And generally, if you've got a product that's working and out there on the market succeeding, people tend to want to back a winning horse. So communication maybe is the answer to that question, really.
Yeah, that certainly is great advice. And with that, Brendan, I thank you so much for joining us here on the podcast, and wish you all the best in your continuous endeavors with Division X and also the support you can provide to society. Thank you so much for being on the podcast.
My pleasure. Stay safe.
Thank you for listening to this episode of the Corporate Innovation Podcast presented by Singularity University and in collaboration with Singularity U Nordic. If you liked what you heard, please spread the news, give a review, or share a link with friends and colleagues. If you have comments, questions, or suggestions for great guests on the podcast, don't hesitate to write me at chris@sunordic.org. That is Chris with a K at sunordic.org. And sign up to the newsletter on www.sunordic.org/podcast. See you on the next episode.